All right. I hope you had a great weekend and you sprung forward. This is the Sean Spicer Show. Fallout from the State of the Union. By the way, it was a fiery, energetic, great speech. And don't you say otherwise or the media is going to go after you. But they didn't say the same thing about Katie Britt, did they? No way. We've got a lot to get into. So let's get into it. All right, we're going to kick off another great week here on the Sean Spicer Show. I hope you had a great weekend and you're adjusting to the new daylight. I'm a fan, you know that. If you watch Friday's show, you're well aware of that. We have a lot to get to today. Chris DeGaulle is here, the host of 990 The Answer and the Chris DeGaulle podcast. Before we get into a conversation with Chris, though, please hit that subscribe button. Hit the subscribe button. We appreciate all the support that you guys have given us. We got a lot to break down, though, because the fallout from the State of the Union has been pretty interesting. The media is in love with everything that Joe Biden said. They've declared it fiery, and we must all use those talking points. Don't get her. He then continues to spend more time apologizing about misnaming the illegal that killed Laken Riley than he does actually getting her name right. Trump met with her over the weekend, and the media is obsessed with Katie Britt's response to the State of the Union. We are live during these premieres, by the way, so if you have a super chat or a comment, please do so. Thank you to everyone who super chatted us on Friday. Really appreciate the support of the show. We've got a lot to break down with you guys. But before we do that, I want to tell you about two of the amazing sponsors that help keep this show on the air, help support us, and bring it to you live every single night throughout all these amazing platforms. All right, guys, longtime watchers of the show know about my friend Leo Grillo. He founded Delta Rescue. You can check out the work at deltarescue.org. Leo rescued a Doberman. He named the Doberman Delta. That stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That became the beginning of what is now Delta Rescue. Delta Rescue is a no-kill sanctuary that for life, not for short terms, it's not a shelter, it is a no-kill sanctuary for life. They take care of malnutrition, dogs, horses, cats that need veterinary care, support. They let them roam free. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out all of those facilities, the work that they do, some of the great videos that show you the interaction that they have with them and the support that they give these animals. But it doesn't happen. Leo's mission, in order to be fulfilled, these people like you and I to contribute $5, $10, $100, $1,000. If you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out the videos, but you can also donate. More to the point, if you really are an animal lover like I am and want to make this an enduring mission, check out the estate planning kit that Leo has on there and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your life's estate. In a time of emergency or crisis, are you going to be ready? I know I am because I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X in my house. That means when crisis hits, I can power everything from a refrigerator to tablets to medical devices to make sure that me and my family and my loved ones are taken care of. And if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, you can be ready too. As I said, you can power your refrigerator. You can bring the Patriot Power Generator 2000X into your house. No dangerous fumes, no noise. The beautiful thing about it is that it's powered off solar panels that come free with it. You just put the solar panels out, the sun regenerates the Patriot Power Generator 2000X, and there you go. No gas to bring in, no fumes to deal with. The Patriot Power Generator takes care of you and all of your needs. So if you're out of power for hours, days, weeks, even months, you and your family will be protected during a time of crisis. Don't wait for that time to happen. Get ahead of the curve like I did. Get a Patriot Power Generator and the free solar panel that comes with it by going to 4patriots.com/Spicer so that you will be ready to take care of you and your family when in a crisis. All right, to kick off the week, let's bring in our buddy Chris DeGaulle. Chris, so much to get to. The fallout, if you will, depends on how you look at it, from the State of the Union continues. In case you missed the memo, President Biden did a great job and it was very fiery. And I hope he was full of energy. It was fire. I want to show you this. Tim Murtaugh, who friend of the show, he was President Trump's communications director in the 2020 campaign, put out this tweet that I just want to put up on the screen. This is it. 7 takeaways from Biden's fiery State of the Union, ABC. Biden's fiery State of the Union address issues contrast with Trump. That's the AP. Reuters, Biden takes on Trump and Republicans in fiery State of the Union. I mean, there are days when people joke about state television and talking points. This is two of the wires. I mean, like, they literally did all go, okay, what are we supposed to call this? Fiery check? Energy? Yep, he delivered. I haven't heard anybody on the left critique this speech. I thought it was angry. He repeated a lot of the stuff from Pat. I mean, again, I've given Biden credit, Chris. I said a speech is a speech. You can stand there and give one. I didn't think it was that good.
No, and poorly delivered, slurred. I mean, you can scream and speed through some. I don't know why he was going so fast. I was reading in the Washington Times this morning, a psychiatrist they profiled said, oh, he was definitely on amphetamines. Now, that's in the Washington Times, not me. I don't know that, but that was someone observing. No, you're right. Everything fiery, fiery, fiery. Now, of course, they've got to do, and you're in communication, so you appreciate this. Now they got to make an ad that says, yep, I'm old. I mean, if...
Right.
I'm not sure.
I'll get to that in a second. I want to get to that. But I'm actually, like, the media take on this was so one-sided. There wasn't even, I mean, every Republican panned this, right? And there was no note, there was no aspect of any of the coverage that said, however, Republicans disagree. It was highly political. It catered to his own base to make sure that they knew that the questions they had about his age, look at, we can prop the guy up. He can speak for an hour off a teleprompter. But there was universal acclaim from the media so that everybody knew we got it. He was strong. And yet it was a divisive political speech.
Yeah. And you noticed every Democrat, you know, standing and applauding after every line. Was that the most over the... I likened it on Friday, talking about it the next morning. I said, this reminds me, if you've ever been to a live taping of a game show or a variety show, if you've ever been, there's a person that comes out and warms up the crowd. All right, the host is about to come out and we need a lot of energy. We need you to jump out of your seat every time. You know, that's what it felt like. It felt like, you know, for at-home consumption to make him look robust and look everybody... very excited about him. Phony.
I tweeted out right afterwards, like, the Trump campaign Trump should have walked out at his rally this weekend and said, I am the predecessor. Like, you know, it's...
That would be a good... That's a t-shirt.
It is. Oh. I said that. I go, how long before they issue t-shirts? I am the predecessor. It was so used. It was like, my predecessor, the predecessor.
How many times they counted it?
It was 13, right?
13.
But I kind of found it funny that, again, for the media headlines that I just read off, this is a guy who literally said my predecessor 13 times with respect to every subject that he brought up. And yet, if I were writing the headlines, I think objectively it's fair to say Biden delivers most political speech. And the other thing that was funny is CNN's own, like, flash poll showed that this is the worst received speech in all of the ones that he's delivered. My point is that objectively, you can say it was a political speech. I think that's what they intended. That's not even a knock on it. That's just a reality. And yet they all come out with amazing, fiery, energetic, great speech. And I'm like, maybe it just shows, by the way, that if you're in the media, that's how you perceived it because you are admittedly a leftist.
Yeah. And you're desperate. You have to use that word fiery because you know that he's come out, you know, just had these nightmare pressers when he does do them, where he just halts and stops and mutters and they needed to see some kind of energy. But I would say, to your point, much like Barack Obama, we've never seen a president point to the Supreme Court the way he did and call them out in an almost threatening way. That is a new thing that I don't, you know, Obama said as a precedent. I'm no fan of personally. I don't know about you. That's very uncomfortable to me. And I don't blame people like Alito and Thomas for not showing up. I think they knew that was coming.
It's funny you say that because they don't have to be there. All right. They go there as a courtesy. And I'm with you. If I'm going to get smacked down from a guy that wants to talk about democracy and preserving democracy, I'd be like, all right, I'm not coming. In fact, I would argue that Republicans, not that we're going to have to deal with another Biden speech, because I think we will have a new president in November who will deliver a joint address next year and not have to worry about this. But if I were Republicans, honestly, like, they don't need to go anymore. Just sit back. and watch it in their office, which I know a few of them did. I just, if you want to just make fun of people and attack people and deliver a political speech, that's fine. You have a right to do that. It's America. It's the First Amendment. But then I equally have a right not to attend and don't go and be a prop in his political theater.
Yeah, when Biden gives speeches, almost every time his speech contains something about getting even, or, you know, he likes to say, you want to take on the government, you better bring a fighter jet. He's very antagonistic, this constant chest poking stuff. And it's not just at the Republicans in the room. I think it's 75 million of us who didn't vote for him.
Yeah, the big sort of fallout from the Biden speech, interestingly enough, is that he took Marjorie Taylor Greene's bait, who had been handing out a button. And it was funny, as he was coming in, we were doing a live analysis here. We went live and we're coming in, and I was explaining to people that a lot of members will sit on that aisle, that center aisle, so they can shake the president's hand, deliver a message, get on camera, whatever. Marjorie Taylor Greene was handing out those buttons that had Lake and Riley on them. And she was saying to him, she had her phone out, say her name, say her name. He grabbed the button and he walked. And then he pulls it up and butchers her name, calls her Lincoln Riley. My God, it's on the button, for goodness sake. Not that you shouldn't know it anyway. And then he refers to the individual who murdered her as an illegal, right? That became the big fallout, is that he, you know, of course, no one cares that he butchered her name. That hasn't gotten any attention. And I think, again, it goes back to the fact that her name's on the button. One, you could have just read it. Two, you should know it. But that got zero play in the media.
That's right. And of course, when he said illegals, I knew, my ears perked up. I don't know if you saw Pelosi. She went on with Tapper and Bash.
Well, let's just show that, so that people who didn't see it, I want to just show people, this is the Nancy Pelosi reaction.
Now, you should have said undocumented, but that's not a big thing. Okay. What's the big thing about
that? No, I actually wasn't even going to ask about that. I was just going to ask more about the moment. But you do think that he should have said undocumented? That wasn't going to be my question.
Well, we usually say undocumented. Uh-huh. He said illegal. I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay, keep going, because you're on a roll there.
Yeah, I mean, instantly, Dana Bash and Jake Tapper's credit, they weren't even going to go there. They wanted to show it for another reason.
Yeah, I mean, you listen, right? Dana says, I wasn't even going to bring that up. Like, it's not a big deal. And Pelosi has to be like, no, 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 we cannot be using those words.
She knew. That's why she got so prickly, because she knew that was going to be an issue for him. And in fact, it was, as you talked about and have talked about, it came up again this weekend. Are you sorry that you said it?
But hold on. But here's the thing that's interesting. As Dana says, I wasn't going to bring this up. Nobody was going to attack Pelosi. Nope. For not acknowledging it. She wasn't even going to be asked that question. These guys are so entrenched that they feel like they have to bring it up. Yes. It's not, right? Dana wasn't going to ask Pelosi the question. No one was going to go after Pelosi for correcting it, because she wasn't going to get asked it. I thought what was fascinating is that Pelosi's gut was to be like, I need to make sure that I'm on record. But let me just play you an interesting clip. This is Chuck Schumer in 2009. Take a listen.
When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong, and we have to change it.
Okay, so here's the beautiful thing about that, Chris. He says we as a government do a disservice to the American people when we don't acknowledge reality. He's saying when we use words like undocumented and not call them illegal because they broke the law, we lose credible. They've gone from that in 10 years to how dare you use this word, and it's a slur and it's anti-Semitic and blah, 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 blah. I mean, that's a pretty big shift. He's on record saying that.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, now they're released on bail after beating up a cop on the same day and flipping off the cameras. Yes, we've fallen a long, long way from just the last 10 years. And, you know, Pelosi getting prickly about it. You know, what's the big deal? She says, what's the big deal? It's like, well, you guys make it the big deal. I mean, and to your clip's point, it used to be a big deal. Words used to mean things.
Yes, no. They still should.
Yeah.
But that's that. See, so look at, we've evolved from illegal aliens to migrants to newcomers. They are now newcomers. Like, it's a social welcome. Come down to the big community room at the condo association, have some punch and cookies, all the newcomers that just arrived. We're going to welcome you. Newcomers don't break the law. Newcomers aren't here illegally. They are, you know, and we have, because when you change the language, you change the stigma. We don't want them because, you know, we're going to change them to newcomers now. Next year, we're going to call them voters, because that's what they will be. We're going to call them citizens in 5 years because that's what they will be. And that's why they want to change the language. And all of these issues culturally, the idea is to destigmatize what is bad behavior. Schumer says this. This is, we don't want to reward bad behavior. That's well, right. Guess what? If you change the name and the stigma, it's no longer bad. If you change being a criminal to being a misguided individual, well, that's not that bad. You know, you don't want to go, hey, let's hire the criminal. We can't hire criminals, but we can hire misguided individuals that need some course correcting.
Yeah. And not one Democrat on Friday heading into the weekend. But yeah, there was an unbelievable vote taken, as you know, as part of that spending bill to keep illegals from being counted in the census. And not a single Democrat could see their way to saying, no, we're not going to count illegals in the census. That's what they want, to your point. So they have to destigmatize it so they can normalize it so we can treat them like they're basically just American citizens.
I want to go down this rabbit hole just a little bit, because there was actually, you bring up a great point. There was a poll that was put out this weekend that said, it was just a Twitter poll. So it's not like it was scientific, but it said, prior to being asked this question, did you know that people in this country illegally are counted in the census and help make up congressional districts and determine representation in Congress? 51%, I think it was, said no, right? Think about that. That part of the goal here that people don't realize is if you're in this country illegally and you are, who cares where you are? You, when they do the census, it's not about citizens or people here legally, it's about people. So you, if there's 500,000 people in one area and 400,000 people in another, when they draw the congressional lines, the person who has the more people gets more representation, gets more federal funding, all of this, even though they're not actual citizens or in the country illegally. It's not even, do you have a green card? It's if you literally are a body and breathe, we count you. And the thing is, I don't think a lot of Americans fully appreciate that. You're actually depriving another citizen. You know, if I pay taxes, I want my fair share to go to my community. Well, I'm losing out because your community has more people here illegally.
Yeah. And remember what Democrats love to say about the Electoral College. They want rid of it. They want popular vote. They want popular vote only. They the pure volume. They think volume in New York and California should ride herd over the population of Wyoming, for instance. Well, where do the bulk of these illegals show up in these already blue states? They would love nothing more than these hugely populated blue states with massive numbers of new illegals to count more than some lesser populated red state, for sure.
So I want to get back to Biden for a second, right? So he blunders. He probably goes back. I mean, by the way, he dithered around the chamber for 25 minutes afterwards, to the point where staff had to come up to him and said, Mr. Biden, no one can leave until you get off the floor. They can't physically secure the chamber until you leave. He'd been there 25 minutes. He was late, as we know, 20 minutes. Then he said, and that affects people's lives and security and obviously, but also like it delayed the Republican response, which we'll get to in a minute. But this is what Biden said the next day when he was asked by reporters before he got on Air Force One about the use of the term. And again, of course, now the media has to ask about this because it matters to them too. So here's what he says.
Do you regret using the word illegal to describe immigrants last night, sir?
Well, not probably. I don't regret it. Was technically not supposed to be here.
All right. So his first answer is actually, his first gut response is correct. The guy was here illegally. Yes. And there's nothing wrong with what I said, right? Because he's used to this language. This is him as an 80-year-old dude. He spent most of his life actually saying normal things, but then it's like, now I have to cater to the far left. So that's the gut, right? Yes, the guy was here illegally. But then he does his first interview in like 4 years with the hard-hitting Jonathan Capehart of MSNBC, who has to bring this up because that's near and dear to them. Then, of course, here we go. Let's play that.
But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Blake and Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that his the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing.
Okay, 48 hours in or whatever it was, he course corrects and like, oh my God, you're right. I should have said undocumented because, well, that's what he is. I mean, he's undocumented. So I'm more concerned. Remember, no concern about butchering Lake and Riley's name. No concern that you've now prioritized the concerns of a murderer over a U.S. citizen. He had to be egged into saying her name, and incorrectly so. He has shown more concern for how he talks about the murderer in this country illegally. Soon, yeah, I mean,
he went on to say, by the way, that I guess murderers like him built the country.
Make sure that we don't disparage a murderer.
Really? Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself.
He went on to say, by the way, that I guess murderers like him built the country.
Oh, that's all. Oh, thank God you brought that up. That is such a great point. Yeah, well, again, they built this country. People who murder
and you that on Thursday night during the State of the Union, he said the middle class built the country and unions built the middle class. So he's very confused on who built the country, Sean.
Yeah. But do you not, Mr. Stigall, dare fact check this man. He spent a lot of time getting ready for this speech, and we will not fact check him because he is our friend. He is on our side in the media.
Fiery.
It was fiery. That's it. Do not use falsehood. That's an F word, but we use fiery, not falsehood. But I think the thing that was interesting is, again, over the weekend, we see this contrast. There's two dueling rallies in Georgia. He is now, of course, speaks about the illegal because he has to make sure that he gets it right. And he chastised Trump, who, by the way, is meeting with Lake and Riley's family in Georgia.
Reminds you of East Palestine, doesn't it? Trump continues to show up where people are hurting. Biden continues to avoid it until he's guilted into it. Just a masterstroke. You know, and by the way, Biden came to Pennsylvania first, you know. He loves to come to the Philadelphia area right after things like this. And he said, send me back to Congress, Sean. Send me back to Congress.
Do not, I warned you, Chris Stigall, do not fact check this man. He does want to go back to Congress to give a speech. It was completely, it makes sense. He was in Congress. He left his pen there. He needs to get sent back to Congress to retrieve the pen. It all makes sense if you know the context.
Yeah,
and
sure,
that's the thing. People on the right just keep hammering this guy needlessly when there's a greater story to be told.
Fiery.
By the way, I did get a kick out of the fact that all these folks in the media were like, the decorum was horrible by Republicans. And I'm like, you mean the decorum when the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, stood behind the President of the United States and literally tore up that wasn't a little
the worst
hit on decorum, maybe is that an Emily Post manual? One shall rip up the speech from end to end.
I have to say, what's decorous in, is that the word decorous? Did I use that right? Where's the decorum in attacking the Supreme Court?
Or attacking one group of Americans or my predator. I mean, it was like, you guys are so selective in your outreach. It's unbelievable. But again, fiery.
Fiery.
My predecessor.
Thing. Energy, vigorous, fiery.
Vigorous. The thing that I thought in this whole debate, right, because we're talking about words, and you brought up, like, I agree, they're trying to change the definition because they want to change the stigma and desensitize everyone to whether it's criminals or people in the country illegally. But our good friend Chad Wolf, who was the former acting Secretary of Homeland Security, tweeted this out. This isn't difficult. The term alien appears multiple times in Title 8 of U.S. code. It describes a person who is not a citizen or national of the U.S. And when those individuals choose to enter the country illegally, they become illegal aliens. There's nothing more derogatory about this term. Beyond that, we have in Texas alone 28 ports of entry. A lot of these people, as we've seen through social media clips, through 60 Minutes on CBS, are literally climbing through barbed wire in between legal ports of entry. There could be nothing more illegal about the way they're coming into the country, and yet we're not allowed to describe it. Again, I go back to the idea of, like, suddenly, how are we going to talk to someone who breaks and enters into your house? A temporary unwanted guest. But Chad Wolf's right. The law says what it says. If these guys, remember, controlled all of Congress for a while, yep. If they're so concerned about words, change the law. Because when Republicans speak and say illegal alien, as Chad Wolf points out, that's what's in Title 8. That's what the law says.
Yeah.
You're not being derogatory by saying that's the law. That's what the words say.
It kind of reminds me of the NAACP. I'll just leave it at that, and you can look it up if you don't know what those letters stand for. It still astounds me that that's allowed to stand by the American left today, and yet it does too. I mean, there are words that are just out there that are codified that the left seems to be fine with, or they ignore. I don't know. But yeah, it's amazing. If they want to change it, they certainly can. I haven't seen them try. This Lincoln Riley thing, though, you'd know better than anybody. It has legs. Like, people are going to forget this, are they, Sean? This isn't going to go away as an issue. She's going to be the poster child.
Well, this gets back to what I've been saying about Republicans for months now, which is Republicans, and I will always remind people that I think it was Beth Van Dyne, Congresswoman from Texas, who said to me, like, I've always said this is a political gift, and it's a little insensitive to say that because of the hurt that is inflicted by this these people coming in illegally, the fentanyl, the trafficking. Just this morning, I think the number of people on the terrorist watch list was over 50 in just this year alone. There were like 198 last year. Now we're already in March and we're at 50. But in purely political terms, it is a gift for Republicans. It is something that every American, because of the way they're touched in one way or another, does get affected by. So I think, to your point, and I hate to use a young woman's tragic death, but it is something that we shouldn't forget. It's the idea that the Democrats are more concerned with the way that we're referring to someone who murdered in cold blood for no reason a young nursing student who was just trying to go for a run or a workout. And we have to worry about the sensitivity around how we refer to the murderer, not the young woman who is a U.S. citizen that was doing nothing wrong. That just shows you the priorities. And if, and only if, we properly capitalize on this, then it will have legs. But I worry, Chris, that Republicans are going to blow it.
Well, I was thinking about when I saw Trump meeting with Lincoln Riley's parents. I suppose you've been in conversations, or at least in the room, when things like this happen. I assume that they are willing to meet with him, or he reached out, or his people reached out to make that meeting happen. One would assume then that maybe even the parents of Lincoln Riley will become part of a, I mean, again, you hate to say it this way, but they seem to be. Is that them lending their support to Donald Trump? Do you suspect they show up in ads this year?
I don't know that they will. I don't know they will do that, but at least from what I'm seeing post this meeting, it seems like they are very appreciative of President Trump reaching out to them. They are very upset about Biden. And it's funny because the Biden team keeps saying it's unfortunate that this is being politicized. And it's like, well, dude, you never actually acknowledged her death.
Isn't this exactly like East Palestine?
Yes.
It's very similar.
Except it's yes, in a lot of ways. But I think, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of parallels there. I think the difference here is that because it's so tragic, that and how it's been able to be capitalized on. But it is unbelievable that they are now worried about it. I think that you'll see the parents, they've at least expressed some concern about President Biden's failure to acknowledge their loss and to side with the murderer. I mean, that's what I think they're probably most pissed about is we just lost our daughter and you're worried about how you refer to the guy who killed her.
That's right. And it's incredibly important to also acknowledge, as you well know, that polls suggest amongst legal Americans who are of Hispanic origin, they know more like this than anybody else.
No. I mean,
this assumption that Hispanics are going to be played by this is silly. I mean, I think he loses.
No, I wouldn't want to be. I mean, for one, if I did it legally, I'd be like, why does this person get to come in illegally and get gift cards, hotel stays, and loyalty points or something? And right. Number one. And number two is it makes me look bad. People have to wonder, did I break the law because I'm being grouped in with people who did something against law? I would be pissed if I followed the rules. I want to pivot, if we can, to the response. Because while I told you you were not allowed to fact check the fiery speech, apparently we are allowed to fact check Katie Britt's speech, especially the story that she told. She did get the SNL treatment. Let me just play a clip for the audience. Here we go.
I'm worried about the future of our children. And this is why I've invited you into this strange, empty kitchen. Because Republicans wanted me to appeal to women voters. And women love kitchen.
All right. First, I will say, that was kind of, I mean, Scarlett Johansson did nail it. I just want to get first your initial reactions. When I was watching this live, Chris, I was sort of like, she hit the right points. I was digesting it in real time. And I thought, okay, subject wise, she nailed it. I think what I heard a lot afterwards was the critique of the style and the presentation, not the content. What was your first take and subsequent take?
My wife is a stay-at-home mother. She's conservative. She votes Republican. And she was sitting in the living room with me when Katie Britt came on. She was scrolling through Facebook on her phone. And mid-speech, my wife looked up and said, "Who is this woman? This is awful."
Now, when she looked up, your wife, yeah, was she in the kitchen?
She'd just come from there.
That's but good. And then probably returning there, right?
I mean, wait, who is this woman? She's awful, says my Republican voting wife. She didn't even know who she was. And so that's what makes doing comedy about her so ridiculous. I don't think most of the country even knows who she is. And the fact that Biden lingered around and waited so long, how many people do you guess even saw that? I don't know how many people.
Well, I think I've started to realize, I mean, Saturday Night Live, A, just doesn't care. I mean, they want to, all they do is try to go after Republicans, yeah, in a mean-spirited way. So is this shocking? But I think that you saw, I mean, it was on the Today Show this morning. It got a lot of play on cable.
Sure.
I think the message is tailored.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the response that for a very specific person, but just, I mean, what was, so that was your wife's response. What was yours?
Yeah, no, it wasn't good. It was cringy. Everybody said it was cringy. I don't know. I interviewed Katie Britt when she had a book come out late last year. She's lovely. She's brilliant. She's smart. We had a great conversation. There was none of that. I don't know what that was. I don't know if she was going for an Oscar or what, but it was, I don't know if she was nervous, but it was overacting. It wasn't necessary. She has the look. She's the soccer mom thing. Fine, all that. But why the lilting, halting, shaky, almost on the edge of tears thing? Not necessary. And I, you know, some people said, hey, lay off her. It's her first time. That's a hard thing. Marco Rubio, the water.
I'm pretty much sure that's the last time.
Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, right message. The words were fine. The delivery was poor. And I mean, Sarah Huckabee Sanders delivered a lights out response last time, and she did it solidly, firmly. That's what you'd want. I wish she'd delivered every time, quite frankly, Sean.
Yeah, I think to your point, my initial reaction was one thing because I was watching it in real time, and I thought, okay, she's, and I just obviously watched Biden, so I was like, okay, she's hitting the border, she's hitting the consequences of this failed open border policy that he has. And then as it sank in, and I started to focus more on the style and the delivery, I started to realize, okay, I get it. It wasn't authentic. How's that?
No, that's right. Look, women like my wife, and I suppose yours and most women across the country, particularly conservatives, they don't like what appears to be this kind of on the edge of tears, weak looking thing. I think it kind of offended women in a way. Like, we're not that passive. Like, we're pissed and we want to let people know. And she didn't come off as assertive enough, strong enough. And I think women want, they like seeing a woman. I think it's smart for the Republicans to
Look, I agree with your assessment, though. I mean, I don't know Katie Britt at all, but the little that I've seen of her, I think she's a very, very talented and brilliant person.
She is.
She's got a great story. She's, you know, from everyone that I know in Alabama that had worked with her. And the reason that she actually won that primary is because she's hardworking. She knows the material. She's obviously very, very smart. I thought the backdrop did look I get what they were trying to do. It almost is like a bunch of dudes plan this and we're like, you know what? We're going to sit you in a kitchen and have a conversation. And it actually backfired in that sense, because I think that a lot of people were like, you think this is like the women just, we all sit around in kitchens. Like, I think even if they just changed the room and been like, okay, I'm sitting here in my living room where we all talk sometimes. The kitchen had such a negative connotation.
A throwback. Thinks the Republicans want to keep all the women.
Right.
Pregnant and in the kitchen, right?
Yeah. And I think I do wonder, I mean, look, as somebody who has spent a lifetime doing this and helped people think about imagery, what's the message? Look, the thing that's fascinating, I tell this to people all the time is, you know, and Trump is brilliant at this. Turn off the volume, watch it, and then see what comes through to you. Because that's a lot of our analysis is actually because of how we perceive things through the imagery that we see, right? What's the backdrop? What are we projecting? How does it look? And that backdrop, I think, backfired because it projected a sense of, we want women in the kitchen and that's where they hang out and make their decisions. She could have talked about family in a much different way. The other thing, just to get to it, is the story is what's getting hit. And at first, I felt like this was really nitpicky because, again, I hadn't fully appreciated the full context, that she's telling this story of this woman who was trafficked. And then the media, they were like, hey, since we don't have any time to fact check Biden, because he was fiery, we're going to go out and fact check Katie Britt. And the story, at least so far, that even Katie Britt hasn't denied, is that she met this woman at a roundtable discussion with other senators, and that she wasn't trafficked. She was not by a cartel. And I mean, there's a bunch of inconsistency. It happened over a decade ago during the George W. Bush administration. And while she didn't technically say it happened during Biden, I will at least agree that there was the implication that that was what it was intended to suggest.
Yeah. And I don't understand why the stretch for a reference. I mean, for heaven's sakes, did you see Ted Cruz grilling Mayorkas with the wristbands? I mean, Ted Cruz tells one of the most compelling, chilling, horrifying scenes of the wristbands that are swapped and the children that are swapped like currency that he's witnessed, that he sees, that you go down there and it's littered with. Tell that story. You don't need the manufacturer reach for horrors. They're there.
I think, don't you agree? I put this on the staff and the consultants around her.
Yes.
Because this is one where they came in and said, we've got this great story. The problem is even the media went and found the story on her website. And I think it was, Joni Ernst or Shelley Moore Capito or one of the other women that she was on this trip with who had posted all the details about this interaction they had with this woman. So they could go back and look and say, okay, this is actually what they said at the time when they had this meeting. Speaking of ads, and you brought this up at the beginning, Biden is out with a new ad. Let me just play a quick clip.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people. And that's what I'm doing.
All right. You mentioned it at the beginning. They're now taking age head on. good idea or bad idea?
Well, isn't the first rule in politics, if you're explaining, you're losing? I mean, if you have to embrace your age, and we keep being told he's fiery. Yes, he has to acknowledge he's old, but you saw the clip, the famous clip, I played it on the show this morning, Mika Brzezinski screaming at his staff that they better take better care of him. They can't let him fall. They can't let him trip. They've got to be better. He's old. It's worth a watch if you haven't seen it, because she rails for like 3 minutes that the staff's not doing well enough to handle him and not make him look as feeble and elderly as he is. So it is an issue. He shows it when he goes, fiery on Thursday night. Friday morning, he says, send me back to Congress. I mean, it's like,
Dude, you took all the juice out of the tank in one night. You can't make the guy get up Friday morning and go. That was a late night, brother. The thing that I find funny about like the Mika stuff and the other pundits who say this is somehow they're suggesting that like there's an alternative. The guy can't go from the late night show to the morning show. You can't do that to him. And there's only so much staff can do. It was like, I remember when there was some turnover in the White House, believe it or not, under Donald Trump, and people would kind of look at me once in a while and be like, you just need to get control of the Twitter. And I'm like, yeah, you do that. And I'd be like, there's only like, you think that somehow like staff doesn't solve everything. The principal at the end of the day gets to still do what they are, who they are. And they're the president. You know, I love all the people who are like, have you ever told Donald Trump to stop? I'm like, yeah, you go tell Donald Trump to stop doing something. See how that goes, brother. There's a difference. Does Donald Trump take advice? As I was talking about Roger Stone on the show on Friday, of course he takes advice. He listens to you much more than anyone gives him credit for, but he will ultimately make the decision that he wants to.
Do you
give him advice? Do you think Joe Biden really cares that Corinne Jean-Pierre told him like, hey, first of all, I don't think she did, but
no.
He doesn't care. And at the end, how else are you going to get out on the plane? I mean, Mika's like, how dare they let him walk up the short stairs? Well,
I'm trying to figure out, and this is a sincere question that probably only somebody like you would know. Do you think at any point they imagined he'd do this for 4 years and stand aside? Or did they always think we want 8 years out of this old guy?
He said 4 years. When he ran, he used the word transition candidate. I mean, I think that's how he decided. That's how I think he sold this to the Democratic base. Guys, don't worry. I'm only going to be a transition. And then you can have your Pete Buttigieg or your Gavin Newsom or whomever.
So he lied to them.
What? Oh, well, yeah. And now, but the excuse is I'm the only one who can beat Trump. I think the thing that's going to be really interesting is enough people, Barack Obama and all these people are like, dude, you can't. Yeah. It's over, brother. And when he loses, I think rather epically, which at least right now, if you look at the polls in terms of these swing states, whether it's your state of Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Arizona, Wisconsin, if he loses real big, which there's of the 8 states that are in play, that's 97 electoral votes. There's a potential for a big sweep here. Biden, I think the question is, he's going to get blamed, right? They're going to say, we told you not to do this and you did it anyway.
Yeah, it feels like the plot in one of those movies where there's a subversive element that puts somebody up as a phony candidate for a time, and then the phony candidate gets full of himself and decides he wants to keep running the show. And the subversive faction of them said, that wasn't our deal. And he says, well, too late now, I'm the show, right? That's kind of what it feels like to me.
All right, I have a yes or no question because we're out of time. The issue of debates has already been brought up. Are there going to be general election debates? Let's just get you on the record. Yes or no?
Not a snowball's chance. No, sir.
All right, Chris DeGaulle, always great to kick off the week with you. Thanks for being here. Look forward to seeing you soon. Everybody, I appreciate you kicking off your week with us here on the Sean Spicer Show. Tomorrow, Rand Paul's here. I want to ask him about his efforts to really rein in federal spending. $35 trillion in debt. I think it's too much. If you have an idea or a thought, I want to hear about it. Go to join the VIP group, SeanSpicerShow.com/VIP. Subscribe on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and go to that YouTube comment section tonight. Give us your feedback now. Let us know what you think. If you have a question for Rand, I want to know about it. Your subscriptions are super helpful to the show. Thanks for kicking off your week with us. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show.
Well, if you enjoyed this content, make sure to like this video, subscribe, and click the notification bell to get more.